Life has its ups and downs, and like many of us, I face moments with depression. Music has always helped me find my way through, and I believe it can do the same thing for you. I'm James Cox, and this is the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast, a podcast about the healing power of music. Hey everybody, welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast. I'm your host, James Cox, and we talk about how music helps with depression and healing and all that good stuff, you know. But today, we have a very special interview today. His name is Christopher Kaufman. I hope I said that 100% correctly. Sometimes the words are hard for me, but that's okay. Let me tell you about it first. So with a background in classical music composition, Christopher has collaborated with world-class musicians and ensembles, and many of his projects feature environmental themes, incorporating hundreds of natural sounds into his compositions. He lives in Brooklyn, New York City, with his family and pets, and is deeply involved in community arts, education, and performances. Christopher, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. It's nice be here with you.
Yes, sir, yes. So you live in Brooklyn, New York.
I do at present, yes.
Yes, with you, right. I've never been to New York, you know, so I've always wanted to go. But I do want to know this. Is it as bad as they say it is on the media? And I'm for sure it's not. You know, the media loves the...
Not in my experience. Okay. It's been wonderful here. I love it. You've got everything at the tip of your fingers. And it's good that we live kind of outside of the hubbub. You know, we live in Brooklyn, and it's a very peaceful neighborhood out here where we live. So we can dive into it, come back, go see shows and plays and the orchestra and all that wonderful stuff, museum, natural history, etc. And also I can put on my concerts downtown where there's a ton of people and a beautiful little theater I work at when I do my performances, my fantastic theater concerts, and there you go.
Nice, yeah. Well, I keep hearing like amazing stuff in New York City. You know, I was wanting to go, so hopefully I'll get down there one time soon, you know, so it's awesome.
You should.
Yeah. So music in Brooklyn. So what are the music vibes in Brooklyn? Because back in the heyday, you had a lot of, like, the whole rap scene. Nowadays, I guess it's more like pop punk, or is it like a different, totally different vibe?
It's so much of everything, really. There's a lot of really good jazz here, and tons of classical ensembles of all kinds, chamber ensembles, larger ensembles, and you have access to the orchestra scene, and you know, that's more my mode. But I do have friends who are in great, like, advanced jazz ensembles, right, or composing and all that kind of thing. So,
thanks. Well, before we start getting to know you more, I want to do like a lightning round, if you don't mind. You know, just to get, you know, to know you a little bit better. Okay, so I got 10 of these. Okay, ink or instruments. Ink or instruments you can't live without. You have to have
ink
it.
Or instruments. Well, you got to have instruments, yeah, because otherwise there's no music coming out. So,
right, exactly.
Got to start with that.
Yeah. Okay. World building soundtrack, either silence, orchestra, or wild nature sounds.
Well, for my fantasy series that we're talking about, I have symphonic, cinematographic music with sound design and narration, so I guess I'd go with orchestra. But you also mentioned my environmental pieces, which is a whole other category of my work, and where I create soundscapes built of hundreds of natural sounds with live musicians and video. So, both.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Favorite mythological creature you did not invent?
Gosh, well, I didn't invent any of the famous ones. And there's a prominent creature in my stories, which is the Pegasus. It's a variation of the Pegasus, so I'd start with that one.
Nice. I always like the Pegasus one, too. Yeah. Very beautiful creature, I think, you know. Yes. Better creative fuel, curiosity, or chaos?
Curiosity, I'd say. That gives you a focus to go find and do.
I agree. Yeah, I don't know what creative fuel chaos represents, but I don't want to do that, you know? So, okay. So what is more fun, drawing a creature or composing its musical theme?
You mean like drawing a creature with words?
Yes.
Drawing the creature or the music? Well, I have... In my story, I sometimes think of text as accompanying the music, so I would go with music first on that one.
I love that. I love that your response on that one. Okay, so you got to choose one superpower for 24 hours.
Okay.
Perfect pitch for emotions or instant world building?
I guess the pitch perfect for emotions. That would be really great.
I figured
I might have that already, but I don't know.
I figured that would come in more handy than world. Well, I don't know. World building sounds kind of cool too. I don't know.
You need both, but you have to pick one for a day. Maybe the other one you can pick for the next day.
Right. Okay. So a book you wish you could crawl into just to explore its landscapes.
Well, I often imagine myself being in Middle Earth with Lord of the Rings characters and participating in adventures and being one of the, maybe not one of the Fellowship, but a friend of the Fellowship, you know, who helps them out and participates and stuff. So I go there.
I still think today is, I mean, nobody can, like, replicate Lord of the Rings. You know, I mean, that's just the perfect trilogy. Front to beginning, you know, back to forward. So, okay, two more and then we'll, you know, move on. First fantasy story that truly made young you say, I want to create one too.
Well, when I was 10 years old, I was just sitting on the couch and my sister, my older sister, who's an artist and kind of like my first teacher, she handed me The Hobbit and I couldn't put it down. So it was The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, and the other would be the Chronicles of Prydain by Lloyd Alexander. And he's been a huge influence on me, so I couldn't put him – I have to give them equal footing.
Right. Okay. Last one, and I think this is the most fun, okay? Which element – earth, fire, air, or water – best fits your writing style to you?
Well, I really feature tons of extremely exciting and visceral action scenes. So I guess I'd go with fire.
Nice. I love fire too. But I don't know which one is. I guess fire and water cancel both out, right? You know, maybe.
Of course, my the title of my books are The Tales of the Ocean City.
Yes.
And the ocean is a huge inspiration for me, whether it's these stories where I'm constantly using oceanic imagery and then fantasizing them, you know, making them different, but starting with ocean imagery. And then I have my environmental pieces where I have the sounds of whales and dolphins going in. Yeah. So maybe I should modify that into the ocean and water.
Right.
But the exciting water.
Yes, absolutely. Man, you sent me two of your excerpts from the books, and I just fell in love with it right away,
Thank you.
Because it's something to hear the story being told to you, right? But when you add the element of music behind it, you feel like you're there with Utah, you know? Yeah. And I just think that's the magical, beautiful thing that that you're doing with this book.
Well, it works out that way. I call them audio albums because there's so much music, you know. And there's also physical books with graphically illustrated pages. And then recently, like what you saw in that the excerpt that I sent you, is I call it a video book, where you have the pages streaming by, fully integrated with the music and narration and sound design all together in one package. So that really works for me. But people sometimes, you know, they want a physical book, and they have the book with the colors and everything in there, and then they hear the audio albums at the same time and get a really full, as you were saying, like an immersive experience. It's like everything almost like being inside of a movie, but you're making it in your own mind.
Right, exactly, yeah. Researching you, I learned that you said that imagination can actually heal people, right? And I think that's a beautiful thing. Could you dive more into that? And was there a moment in your life that when imagination generally carried you through something difficult?
Well, many times.
Okay.
Well, first of all, you could say, look around our lives today, and there's a kind of, well, drabness. You know, we live in these square boxes, and there are fluorescent lights, and what used to be a glorious paradise of nature is now, you know, a parking lot. You know, and it's all over the place like this. And then, you know, every town looks the same, even if you go abroad, you know, the same construction, the same. And so it gets this a sameness, there's a grayness, and there's a real lack of imagination. There's like a what do you call it, like a downtrodden, degrading, a degradation, I think, yeah. Say, of imagination in our daily lives in the modern world. So that can really lead to a feeling of depression, you know, like walls closing in and not being able to see beyond them. Whereas through the arts and especially the great fantasy stories, you know, you can just absorb this imaginative way of feeling and seeing. So everywhere you look, instead of a gray wall and this, that, and the other, you see with your imagination, you feel with imagination, and everything can open up and become colorful instead of drab and gray, you know, the more you do that. And so that principle there has been invaluable to me at points in my life where things looked like they were closing in and not going anywhere. And then I go inside into the imaginative worlds and I look out and I'm able to imagine what I can do and create things, you know, and change my life and my perspective.
Wow, that's awesome. So your pacing in writing is influenced by musical tension and resolution, correct?
Sure. You mean that, like how music works?
Yes.
So musical harmony, you know, is about simple. You can have it in all kinds of different languages, of musical languages, but there's a universal principle of creating complexity and resolving, you know, and we call that a cadence. It can be a chord progression, or it can be a buildup of textures, complicated textures that resolve into something simpler and clearer at the end, if that's what they're going to do. Right. And so that principle is infused in my writing and my stories just constantly, a buildup, a conquering of obstacles, a resolve. And in fact, in the first book, it starts off very peacefully as the character, the young man Harlute, and his lifelong companion, whose name is Visbutian. She's a Perianth, which is a kind of telepathic Pegasus. So you see, you can imagine the Pegasus, but then it's advanced beyond that, and they have a very close family relationship. And they're going peacefully across the southern plain to join more fully in the city life from the island Spire, where he grew up, the little island there. And he's growing, and he sees the beautiful princess and her Perianth bond, as they're called. And he's about to say hello, and then these evil warriors attack them. They're called the Vorm, and they're the main antagonist for the whole story. It's the hive mind. It's a whole structure and backstory about how they evolve. But what happens in the first book, which is titled Battle in the Sky, is a 40-minute I go by minutes rather than words because of the music, but it's like a 40-minute visceral, powerful, active battle scene that resolves at the end with extreme positivity and, you know, romantic glory. It's just like beautiful ending of resolve at the end of all this tension and the battles that happen, multiple battles between Harlud and Vespucian and the Vorm and the Brynlyn and the Vorm and all this kind of thing. So this constant build up and release of tension in the story is led often by the music. In fact, I created them both simultaneously. In fact, I've started writing it. I had the stories in my head. You know, I started writing fantasy stories with illustrations like 9 years old. And then I found music and went to the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts and et cetera. And then I was a composer. I lived a life of a composer all the way through my doctoral degree from Cornell University in music composition. But my stories never left me. So I emerged with, simultaneously, my advanced degrees in music and the complete event structure for Tales of the Ocean City through Book 8, which I'm writing now. So it's like a 35-year arc to creating this story, you know. And when I started writing it down at first in the early 2000s, it was okay, but it just wasn't quite happening until I developed my home laboratory, where I'm composing music in my laboratory with my orchestras. And I started saying the words out loud and accompanying it with the music and the words and the narration all together. And that's when my writing style actually happened. And I was creating them both at the same time. It was a very exciting experience. You know, I'd be creating the music for an early part and taking sheets of paper, and the ending occurs to me in a wild, you know, inspired phase of work, and it all came together really beautifully. So I think that really communicates in the audio and the video book and everything else.
So if it's okay with you, Chris, I would love to play like an excerpt from your book, Tales of the Ocean City, Book 1, if you don't mind. You want to? Yes. All right, here we go. Okay, everybody, this is Tales from the Ocean City, Book 1. Here is the excerpt from that.
Tales of the Ocean City is the epic tale about a young civilization turning the corner into the future. But first, they must face a terrible enemy from the deep past. The main characters are a young man named Harlut and his lifelong companion,
So this big, huge world that you created, right, is there some kind of element to it that's meaningful to you, but readers often overlook it?
Well, I don't know. I sometimes mention it, so they might get it, but these pariants, these animal characters, which have a highly evolved civilization and everything, but they're based on our animal friends, like my pets, you know, that I grew up with,
yeah,
that I was very close to during dark times, and I was very close, and I almost felt like we communicated telepathically to each other, you know, like it was the look in her eyes, you know, my off-breed German Shepherd, silver and black, he was beautiful and smart, yeah, and a great companion. In fact, when I started doing illustrations for Tales of the Ocean City, and I was doing Vespucian's face, I kept making her ears look like dog ears.
Okay.
It was like really funny. Like, I couldn't get off of that. It kept looking like my dog. And I said, okay, she's a horse. I had to change
it. Right, yeah.
But, you know, I was really creating that face of that companion I had when growing up. So I don't know if people will just pick up on that unless I tell them.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So let's do a what-if scenario, okay? Let's just say you are in the audience listening to your own book, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
What moment would you be most excited to watch or listen to unfold that you wouldn't expect, you know, to happen? I know you wrote it, but as a fan listening to your own, you know, Is there like one part of the book that you really, 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 really loved that you can't wait for to come to that part?
Well, there's a few of them. I certainly love deep into the book one, like a chapter, I call them episodes, episode seven, yeah. Where it's after, the aftermath of the battle. And the Sister Twain arrive. They're the captains of the guard, and they're patterned after my sisters. Alacy and Alaxa, they're called. My sisters are named Alice and Alexandria.
Yeah.
The Sister Twain, these glorious captains of the guard come, and they pick up Harlut, who's wounded, and they take him to the Ocean City, and the music just gets really beautiful. And then in the last chapter, the ancient warrior virgin arrives, and his Perianth bond is the king of the Perianths, named Jagafra, and he surveys the scene, and they talk about the Vorm, and that there looks like war is coming, and the story is kind of set up. But then they fly to the Ocean City. And there's this beautiful poetic moment that I really like, where Verdun is thinking back of the battle scene and Brian Lynn, who he helped raise as almost like family. And then they arrive at the Ocean City, and the description is really poetic and beautiful of the arrival and the stars and, you know, and then the very end. And so those are my favorite parts.
Yeah. I guess it would. Well, I guess you would kind of expect it because you wrote it, right? Yeah, but I guess you were kind of light up with joy, jumping up and down, hearing that what you wrote. You know, it's always magical.
I hope so.
Actually, hear somebody read your own stuff back to you. As you know, sure. I mean, I've heard the saying. You know, it's more. It tastes better if someone else makes it for you. You know.
Well, I've experienced that many, many, many times as a composer.
Yes.
Yeah. When we're back to the ink part, you know, right. I compose, and I write it down, and I hand it over to a great musician who plays it, and I go, wow, that's a little bit better than I thought it was, or whatever. You know, it's like, oh, I wrote that. It was maybe 10 years, 20 years ago I wrote the piece, and they're performing it, and it's a wonderful experience that way.
Yeah. So we learned you're a classical composer.
Yeah.
So what musical form best matches the way you approach storytelling? Because there's a lot of musical forms, you know, from different aspects. You know, what?
Well, my wellspring, when I was a young lad, I was high school, and I was getting into music, I was just listening like to the music of Stravinsky, like all the time, just like every day. I was listening to the music of Igor Stravinsky, you know, Petrushka and the Rite of Spring and Symphony in Three Movements and Orpheus and all these things. And so my music is infused with influence. Mm-hmm. It's different, it's original, but, you know, it's like symphonic tone poem, powerhouse new music. Hard to explain, but
yeah,
that would have to be my answer.
Okay, yeah,
if that works for you.
So you're on your eighth book right now, correct? And that's coming out next year.
The eighth book of, well, yeah, it'll come out in a few months. I'm finishing it, and it'll be April or March or something like that.
Right.
But you see, I did the first two books of Tales of the Ocean City. And then I did these, I started my concert series, The Fantastic Theater, and for those I created theatrical works, which are also books. It was like an educational outreach program I created it for my daughter originally, and I wrote pieces for us to perform together, and I created, so those are books too. They're The Musical Forest, which is kind of like Peter and the Wolf on steroids, where it teaches musical fundamentals through this glorious fantasy story. And The Fantastic Zoo, where children are taken to the Fantastic Zoo and they hear the stories of the phoenix and the dragon and the mermaid, and it talks about the war and imagination and all this stuff. And then I wrote a cinematic ballet for my daughter called Dancing Nighthawk. So all of these are books as well as audio albums and live shows, like conceived simultaneously all together and performed. And on my, you can see movies of a couple of these on my YouTube channel, which is called Sound Artists, which is also my home website. So that's Sound Art Us. Right. Sound Artus.
Perfect, yeah.
Some people go Sound Artist, but no, right, Sound Artus. Sound Artus.
I will make sure that
Sound Artus was a character. He was a character in one of my books, Dr. Sound Artus. So that was that. And then you can see the movies for the Fantastic Zoo and all these things there if you wish. So there's a hiatus. And then I came back to Tales of the Ocean City and did books 3 through 5. In like 1 year, and the first 5 books of Tales of the Ocean City are a unit, like a series of 5 books. The Vorm War ends with glorious epic battles and all this kind of stuff. And then I was warmed up and continued, and it has a follow-on series, The Green World, where it becomes fantasy sci-fi, and the civilization grows, and they excel, and they go out and explore the stars.
Nice.
And that's what I'm doing now.
Has anybody ever came up to you and wanted to make it like a cinematic movie? Because this just sounds like amazing. You know, it would be a
people have mentioned like what you have, but Peter Jackson has yet to call me.
Right.
I'm waiting for the call, you know.
Still waiting on this call. Right?
Here I am.
There you go. I'll forward you his number. I don't have it. I mean, you know, who am I, right? Yeah.
Sorry. So,
all right. See, if you have all these great characters and all these 8 books, right? So we're going to do something fun, okay? Take 2 characters from the series, right? And if you had to score a single character theme throughout the whole genre or throughout the whole book series using one instrument, which instrument would it be?
Well, there is a character named Elah, and he is a bard-like character. He knows the histories, and he's young, and he's sarcastic, and he's a lot of fun, and he's constantly strumming. He plays an electric guitar,
okay.
So it's kind of like almost a rock orchestra style when he's engaged. Another character is on the other side of things would be the king, King Brohuin. Now, in the Spire Castle where he resides, there's a gigantic organ that takes up the entire wall, like a giant octopus across the wall of the concert hall. And he creates organ symphonies. In the beginning of Book 2, there's a lot of interaction where Harlute is walking down the Spire Castle to the concert hall, and he hears this organ symphony where the king is creating music that's reminiscent, that brings back the images and the feelings and the storyline from the first book.
Right.
So there you go. There's 2. Organ and electric guitar.
There you go. I love the electric guitar, you know. I've tried to learn on it, but I just couldn't, you know, because I was 14. I'm like, who really cares, you know? But now I got like 5 guitars. I need to, they're just sitting around collecting the dust, so I need to brush them up and learn, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because I guess, like, music, like, not only hearing the music, playing the music is also super healthy for you, too, you know?
Oh, yes. I mean, your bones vibrate, you know, your body vibrates, and the cells change, you know? I know a lot of people, in case there's someone looking like that, what am I going to do? Maybe they're older or something, but cello is a great one. Because you don't have to like violin the holding of it. You just put it there and you take a bow and go and you vibrate and you can make these deep beautiful sounds and get things going really easily, and it just is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Okay, so I do have a few more questions, but I do thank you for coming on the show. This is an awesome conversation so far. So,
I'm enjoying it myself.
Thank you. So. So your worlds incorporate like danger and beauty at the same time, you know, kind of like the real world we live in now, you know. So what's the most beautiful thing that you ever imagined that you still haven't figured out how to put in a book yet, or a piece of music?
You've touched on we're talking about the stories here. is the challenge of what I see in my head, which is all these complicated, beautiful, amazing things, and then getting that into words really, really simply, you know, like the least amount of words you can to clearly express it so people then see it in their minds. So that's just something I'm constantly doing with that. And, of course, in music, you know, it just happens. You know, I just compose. It depends. Each project is really different. And so, yeah. Like, there is one I can mention where it's the environmental piece, Hudson Valley Music. We're at the end. It's celebrating the beauty of nature. And I'm using the words of John Muir and saying them out loud while the music is going on with these beautiful harmonies and stuff like that. So that would be a good example of creating something as beautiful as you can think of and getting it out there as best you can.
Right. It's perfect. That's perfect response. So thank you for that. Three more questions and then we'll let you go. Okay, so let's go all the way back in time, okay, to where you were, say, 14, 15, 16, okay? We're looking around your room. Are we looking at any musical posters? And if so, which ones are we looking at?
Well, my the room I'm remembering, I'm seeing, I'm being there now, didn't have anything on the walls, really. But I had a little record player. And those old records, these old beat-up records, you know. And they had Stravinsky's Firebird on them. So you could say the label of the record could be like a poster.
Right. Exactly.
And that's what you're seeing.
Nice. I don't think I even had musical posters, you know, because I had posters of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, He-Man, and stuff. I was, you know, I really wasn't big into music, like when I was, you know, 6 or 7. But by the time I was a high schooler, you know, there was nothing better than Metallica. Metallica was my life, and sure. You know, bread and life. You know, so yeah, so that was awesome time for me.
But I don't think I really had
any musical posters, you know.
If I had one, it might have been Santana.
Yes, great, great, great musician. Yes, all right. Okay, so we're going to do a Mount Rushmore of your favorite four of any band of any artist. You have four of them. Who are they? And yeah, do like a best out of the best.
Okay, well, I mentioned. I'll pick a couple from each category, yeah. Like music. It's Stravinsky. And my teacher, Donald Erb, who, if you haven't checked his music out, ERB, you should. It's incredible music. Just like the orchestra is alive, this giant, beautiful, glorious, alive thing. And then on the writer's side, I did mention Lloyd Alexander as number one. And yep. The reason was, and you can go online and see a video of him. And he's talking about when he wrote for grown-ups, as you might say, adult people, and he wrote books, and it's all fine. But when he started writing for young people, everything was deeper and more. You'd think, oh, no, it's more trite. It's like not as powerful as for adults. No, the exact opposite. The emotions were deeper and more powerful. The experience was greater, and those are the works he's famous for. And then another writer, I mean, the obvious is Tolkien. Yeah. But you could also mention H.P. Lovecraft, who I get my monsters from. You know, inspired by monster creatures. And Michael Moorcock. I really enjoy his work. And occasionally, when Harlute, the main character, he has like solo adventures. I get him separated on his own and having a big adventure. And I'm thinking a little bit of Edgar Rice Burroughs during those times.
Nice. All great picks, and I got to look them up because, you know, because I know a lot of stuff, but I don't know more than you. So I got to take what you said and look them up.
I'm sure there's plenty of things sure there's plenty of things you know I don't know. We have experiences.
I don't know. Yeah. So, okay, so we got one more question, and this is going to be the hardest question I'm going to ask for you today. Okay, I know, right? It's like, oh my God, James, you're killing me here, right?
I'll do my best.
All right, so is there one artist, album, or song that you can listen to right now, but you can't tell me or anybody else how it makes you feel deep inside your soul?
That is a hard one. Because, I mean, you can think of things you love, but people would feel those things. Right? So I guess what I would do is pick a living composer that you might not be familiar with.
Okay.
And the kind of thing you might have to listen to a couple times to get a feeling for.
Yeah.
But I don't know your experience, so I'm going to just throw out Béla Bartók's Fourth String Quartet,
okay.
The last movement, which is the Bulgarian power rhythms. It's incredible. Yeah. It's really
nice.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah. Well, see, the reason why I like this question is because I love to learn from individuals like yourself, you know, because I'm always looking for music. It doesn't matter what it is, you know, because I'm a music fan by heart, you know. My number one genre is always going to be country, you know. But outside of that, I'm open to anything at all, you know. And I'm sure you are, too, being a classical composer.
I'm open to many things. The worst thing in the world is the musical snobs.
Yes.
And they're everywhere. I mean, usually when people think musical snob, you're thinking of some classical guy saying, that's not real music or something like that, some old guy with the... But no, I've been out there, and there are non-classical music snobs, too. And they're the same exact person. In other words, what a snob does, you might have experienced it, they put everything into a little box, everything into little boxes. And the smallest box is the one they make for themselves, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, the academics are like, my box wins, you know, and that's their career, you know, like that. So I don't do that.
No.
It's like
no.
The classical music guy, the snob, will go, I'll see you in the history books.
Right.
And then the non-classical music snob will go, see you on the way to the bank. So I was like, history book, bank. So I just, for myself, I just put it all out, whoa, like this.
Yeah.
From, on one side, you have like ringtone music for your phone. I have a couple of those, by the way. And then over here, you might have super like orchestra music string quartets. But they're all on a horizontal plane.
Yes.
So that means you can do anything.
Right.
And I've written commercials. I've done independent movies. I do all these different things. I don't even think about it. I'm just free.
Yeah.
So I think everyone should be like that.
I'm right there with you, man. Yeah. So
right.
Let's give you a quick shout out before we let you go. Everybody can go to ChristopherKaufmanAuthor.com and all your stuff is there. I don't see any social media links. Are you on Instagram and Facebook and all that?
Sorry, I didn't
give
you those. My author site is that, or you can just go talesoftheoceancity.com. They'll take you to the same place. My home website I mentioned before, soundartist.com, which is also the name of my YouTube channel. I have a Tales of the Ocean City Facebook page, and I believe on Instagram, it's called Kaufman Tales.
Okay.
Kaufman Tales. That's one of my, I've used that. I had a store named Kaufman Tales. And that's the, you know, they're all linked up to each other. So you find one, you'll find them all.
Yeah. I'll definitely leave the links in the description of the episode and on YouTube.
Thank
so, you know, no matter where you go, they can always find you. So we do love you here at When Words Fail, and we beg you to come back anytime you want to, okay?
Absolutely. When I finish book 8, I'll give you a call.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Really nice one. Good job. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And with that said, everybody, always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.
Indeed.